Well, you hear that familiar theme song, and that means we're going out to the other coast of the United States, at least the other coast from New York, and we're going to go visit with Michael Snyder, and we're going to check in and have him do his movie reviews. Hi, Michael.
Hey, greetings from Hollywood, Alex, and hello, GabNet listeners. We're glad to be back, and we're glad to have Alex on dry land. And it is, in fact, the beginning of July, and we're heading into the 4th of July holiday weekend. We have some movies to cover since we've been out of the circuit for a couple of weeks. And it's funny, not a lot of great films coming out on the 4th of July, but we do want to talk about some stuff that has come out in the past few weeks while you've been away. And we're going to lead off with a kind of a controversial movie, Supergirl, which received a lot of online hate. They say that a lot of superhero fans out there are opposed to any woman-led superhero movie, and they specifically have complained about the fact that Millie Alcock, who plays Supergirl in James Gunn's second film in his gun-controlled DC universe of film, is just not, I don't know, she doesn't look as pretty as they expect Supergirl to look.
Can I tell you something initially? I have watched part of this movie, not the whole thing, because I didn't have time to get through it. But what I saw, I thought she was wonderful.
Boy, I can't believe I'm saying this. You are absolutely right, Alex. You know, I hate to have to give you your props, but you are absolutely on the mark here. This adapts the basics of the 8-issue miniseries Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, a comic book series written by Tom King with this beautiful art by Bilquis Evely. And again, as I said, Supergirl is the second official feature film in the revised DC Comics cinematic movie and TV universe, helmed by James Gunn, who made the Guardians of the Galaxy films for Marvel and Suicide Squad for DC. And he introduced the Man of Steel himself in last year's Superman. And that movie featured an end-of-credits cameo by Millie Alcock. Now, if you don't know who she is, she was one of the Targaryen royalty types in House of the Dragon. She was amazing in an absolutely terrific miniseries called Sirens, which you can see on Netflix if you can. And she shows up in Superman as drunk and mildly belligerent.
That's what I loved about it.
I know. She is the best thing about Supergirl.
Well, no, there's one other thing that's the best thing about Supergirl.
Okay, well, let me get to that. When this thing works, it is as entertainingly scruffy and messy as her portrayal of the title character, who is Superman's cousin, Kara Zor-El. And what makes her, you know, very, very unique is she's the only other survivor of the doomed planet Krypton that we know of, other than her pet, Krypto the Superdog. And like Kara, Krypto is kind of this loose cannon and has amazing powers, and the powers are such that Kara and any Kryptonian can't get drunk unless she's under the rays of a red sun, which is where we first encounter her in Supergirl. The deal is, under a red sun, Kryptonians have no power. Under a yellow sun, they're like Superman. Anyway, we get bits of her origin folded in here and there, and some nice flashback and, I guess, I don't know, space-time clips of the appealing David Corin Sweat as Superman. One of the issues with Supergirl is its need to include that backstory to explain Kara's angst, which is the source of her self-destructive behavior and her initial disregard for helping people. I mean, she saw her family destroyed, her little bit of Krypton destroyed before she was shot off towards Earth. Now, those bits of her origin are sometimes gratuitously cut into the basic plot of Woman of Tomorrow. And the whole effect is like it's an interstellar Western that's as influenced by True Grit as it is by Star Wars and Mad Max, with like Kara is sort of the Rooster Cogburn character, and a young actress named Eve Ridley plays Ruthie, a kid seeking revenge for the violent actions of a sci-fi thug named Krem of the Yellow Hills.
Yeah, you're right. It is kind of True Grit in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it is. And Matthias Schoenaerts, the Belgian actor, plays Krem, and I love him, but the villain is kind of lukewarm. But added to the mix not originally in Woman of Tomorrow, and not bad at all, is alien bounty hunter Lobo, who is this indestructible Wolverine type on a space-traveling rocket-powered motorcycle. And he's played by Jason Momoa in a DC Comics role that is much more suited to him than the version of Aquaman he played in the previous DC Universe. All I can tell you is this poor kid, the lone survivor of Argo City, which was preserved by a force field for all these years, is coming to grips with all of this. And this is trauma that Kal-El, Clark Kent, who was raised since infancy by loving adoptive parents in Kansas, never experienced, which it explains why she's the way she is. Well, so to wrap up on this, don't believe all the hate. It's a good, solid film. She is absolutely great.
I agree with you. What I've seen so far, I haven't seen the whole thing, but I got to tell you, number one, I think the approach to this film is better than any way you could do it. I mean, she has a lot of problems, you know?
Right.
And she only has a lot of problems added to them by this dog, who is like the world's worst pet. You know? He's like...
He's not space... Not housebroken. He's not space broken.
They you have him. They have him though. Opening up by peeing on a picture of Superman. You know, I mean, this dog is just... And he was a pain in the ass in the Superman movie, you may remember. I mean,
sure.
He kept hanging onto the cape, you know, and things like that. I mean, I just felt that what I saw, at least as part of this movie, and I haven't seen the whole thing, is that it kind of has a real original feeling to it. And
right,
she is perfect because why do you have to have a pretty Supergirl?
Well, no, a conventionally pretty. She's attractive. She's cute. But I have to say, the script, which is by an actress and screenwriter named Anna Nogueira, doesn't all hang together. But Alcock's Kara and this wild dog of hers pull it together. And one more quick note before we move on. The plot element of the movie about the human trafficking of young girls or the alien trafficking of young girls is pretty damn relevant with, you know, members of the Epstein class in positions of power here in the real world. Supergirl was directed by Craig Gillespie, who did I, Tonya and Cruella. So he's quite at home with unhinged women. I thought it was good.
Absolutely. And what I have to say is it did not do well at the box office, which means you'll be able to see it on HBO Max within a week and a half. You know,
huzzah. But it
didn't do good business because it got kind of mediocre and lukewarm reviews. And I think they were wrong. I think this is a fun picture. This is an entertaining time at the movies. Although why you want to go to a theater, I have no idea. But if you want to, do so. And that's they're going to claim this a failure. They're going to say she's not bankable. And it's unfair. It's really unfair.
It's not perfect, but I thought it was a good film and it was worth seeing for all of its flaws.
Yeah.
All right. How about a movie I can totally endorse unequivocally? And it opens in theaters across the country this weekend, and it opened in New York and L.A. last week. It's called The Invite. So a misbegotten dinner party at a nicely furnished San Francisco flat goes off the rails in The Invite, which is director and actress Olivia Wilde's latest film as a director. And it's smart, darkly funny, and eventually wrenching. It adapts the Spanish film The People Upstairs, which is about two couples getting to know one another, maybe intimately, maybe to their mutual detriment. Upstairs neighbors Pina and Hawk, a therapist and a masseur played by Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton, make a lot of noise during, you know, sex. And it's been gnawing at their downstairs neighbors, Joe and Angela, a music teacher and a housewife played by Seth Rogen and Wilde. So Joe and Angela have a tween daughter. They're experiencing marital troubles. And Pina and Hawk, they seem as if they have a healthy relationship that Joe and Angela should probably envy to an extent. So the daughter is at a sleepover, and Angela figures they've got to deal with these people. So she tells Joe that she's invited Pina and Hawk to an impromptu dinner in an attempt to get them to get to know them better and maybe work out some of the issues they have as neighbors. Now, this is against Joe's wishes. And the whole affair becomes increasingly contentious until it takes this really unexpected turn. So imagine if Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was rewritten by Pedro Almodovar and Judd Apatow, and you'd have some idea of what the invite is like. The script is by Will McCormick and Rashida Jones. Yeah, that Rashida Jones. And it snaps. And the foursome of actors attack it and one another with gusto. So Wilde, Rogan, Cruise, and Norton are the only actors in the movie, and they are uniformly excellent. And Wilde keeps all of it kind of hurtling forward with great panache. Plus, I'll tell you what, she's, you know, worked with a lot of actors. I think she was married to a famous comedic actor, somewhat famous, and her comedic chops are considerable, especially when her character Angela is sniping at the slovenly, whining Joe. I really thought the invite was good, and I hope people check it out. And it'll work fine at home, by the way, in case you're wondering. Okay. Just a little reminder before I bring up Toy Story 5. You've got a friend in me, Alex. Anyway, all right. I will spend hours in the dark watching movies and judging them to provide you with the consumer's guide so you can make smart choices about how to spend your valuable screen time. And speaking of screen time, a sensible and emotionally satisfying capper, I hope, on the pretty marvelous animated movie series from Pixar and Disney, following the adventures of a group of anthropomorphic toys from one owner to another, Toy Story 5 is kind of unexpectedly better than what preceded it directly, Toy Story 4, because it shifts the focus from Cowboy Woody, voiced again by Tom Hanks, and astronaut Buzz Lightyear, voiced by Tim Allen yet again, to cowgirl Jessie, voiced by Joan Cusack. And this is a thoughtful, very relevant look at how online media and the lure of those digital devices is undermining human connection and playtime for children. So, as in the previous film, the current owner of the toys of record is sweet, shy Bonnie. And she's had most of the toys in the franchise, and she's having a difficult time making friends with the kids in her neighborhood, all of whom would rather stare at their portable touchscreen tablets than play with honest-to-gosh toys. When Bonnie is gifted with a digital pad and gets caught up in her peer group's social media relationships, the toys, which, by the way, are led in Woody's absence, as seen in Toy Story 4, by Jessie, are boxed up and donated to, I don't know, Goodwill or the Salvation Army or some other charitable thrift store operation. Meanwhile, Jessie and her trusty horse Bullseye are on a mission to secure a new friend for Bonnie. And Jessie has always kind of thought that she had a special relationship with Bonnie and had one with all her previous owners. But being passed along and forgotten by those owners is what fuels a lot of the emotional impact of the movie, which is really enhanced by Joan Cusack's marvelous vocal performance as this sensitive cowgirl doll. As usual with Pixar, regardless of the actual quality of the project, and as you well know, some have been less than their best, Toy Story 5 looks gorgeous, and it's better than Toy Story 2 or 4. It seems like every odd-numbered installment is superior to the even-numbered ones, and maybe this would be a smart endpoint, especially considering how it takes on the old-school toys' biggest 21st-century nemesis, those omnipresent screens. Taylor Swift provides a nice end credits song. You know, there's a certain honor to voicing a toy in the series, I think, and there are a lot of repeat voices besides the three nominal leads. Yeah, Tony Hale is back as the Forky. You know, Ernie Hudson is here. There's a lot of talented people involved in this thing. And Greta Lee is the voice of Lily, the lily pad, which is the it's the touchscreen pad that is kind of the problem in the circumstance for Bonnie and the actual old school toys. Pixar mainstay Andrew Stanton, who was responsible for Finding Nemo, Wall-E, and Finding Dory, directed and co-wrote the script with McKenna Harris. I mean, he co-wrote all the previous Toy Story movies, so he knows these characters to their core.
Didn't he also direct that Carter on Mars movie?
Yeah, thank you. John Carter, which is much better than the reception it received, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a very talented person, and I think he did some other directorial things with humans. I can't remember what, though.
But, oh, he did a movie that I didn't like, which was a three-part story about the nature of the universe. I forgive me, I can't remember the title. It was not his best work. But John Carter, I'm glad you brought it up. That was good. And, man, he knows the characters. And I thought Toy Story 5 was a lovely piece of work. And it's in theaters.
It's amazing. But he had to go back to Pixar because his movie career didn't take off, his directorial job, because once you do something bad in Hollywood, you're out, you know.
You got a little smear on you, buddy.
Yeah, you got stank.
Well, one more quick note. There is like a kind of a toilet trainer toy called Smarty Pants, and that's one of the new toys introduced here, voiced by Conan O'Brien. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in, and I thought it was good. I want to talk now about a movie that reflects all the discussion these days about extraterrestrial contact, ostensibly covered up by the U.S. government for decades. The movie is called Disclosure Day, and I guess it was a good time for Spielberg to crank out his third, or I don't know, his fourth feature film about or including alien visitation. The guy did E.T., Close Encounters, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Not a great film, but still, it had an alien component. This movie is pretty intriguing, and it's kind of one of my favorites of his for the past 20, 30 years. It's not a great film, but it's all about the secrets that have been covered up by the government of alien visitation going all the way back to the late 40s. And it starts off with a weather girl played by Emily Blunt, who starts speaking in an unknown language and like losing the thread during a broadcast. And it turns out that she and a character played by Josh O'Connor are somehow connected. And he's on the run. He's had some secrets that he's going to blow the whistle on that he's stolen from the government. He and his girlfriend, played by Eve Hewson, are being chased by various black ops types, and Colin Firth is the heavy that's running this secret organization that's trying to smash down Dr. Kellner and his endeavor to reveal the truth about aliens. Again, Josh O'Connor playing the Kellner character. I thought it was pretty decent. Coleman Domingo's here as a guy who's probably on the side of the doctor and the weather girl. And Wyatt Russell is also on board as the weather girl's boyfriend, and he doesn't know what the hell's wrong with her. There are aspects of this thing that I thought were totally exciting. There's an action sequence. Spielberg is so good at action sequences. The chases where the government is closing in on these two very, very different but somehow connected people are, you know, show how masterful a director Spielberg is. Is it a great film? It is not. David Koepp, who cranks him out, he does one good movie and then he does one mediocre film. This is somewhere in the middle as a screenwriter for David Koepp. But ultimately, I say it's absolutely worth seeing. And I know this is not really fair, but I was totally immersed in it because I saw it in an IMAX theater. And that was just a great experience in terms of this particular kind of film. Disclosure Day gets a tentative thumbs up for me. Again, not great, but, you know, Spielberg, even at his age, and I say that in full knowledge that both of us are getting older, he's got it. He still has it. Did you see it yet by any chance?
No, I haven't had a chance to see it. No.
You can wait till it gets to
We just got through watching two Indiana Jones movies, the old ones. And I'm telling you, he's a great director when it comes to action. You know, in this kind of thing, I think this is his place. You know, I never liked what he was doing with serious stuff. You know, but man, oh man. His Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom may be the most perfectly directed movie in history. I mean, I would show it to anybody as a masterclass.
And that's one that received a lot of negativity because of various aspects.
Not the Temple of Doom. I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Excuse me.
Right. Now, thank you for bringing this up. We've been friends for a very long time.
Why did I say Temple of Doom? I hate that picture. Anyway.
Yeah, there you go. So you and I have been friends for a while, and we've gone to countless, I think, movies together as we've worked together in various broadcasts and netcasts or whatever. And you and I, in the wake of Raiders of the Lost Ark, we have discussed this. It could be the perfect film. I have quoted you.
If I wanted to show somebody a movie on how to make movies, okay, I just show them that movie. That's the master class.
It is. Completely and utterly. All right, let's start wrapping this thing up. I do want to talk about one of the only high-profile films opening on the July 4th weekend or for the July 4th weekend. And I don't know, maybe studios were afraid of facing off against it because it's Minions and Monsters.
Oh, that's Jesus. Right.
The,
oh, God.
The latest movie. You know, it's
I hate the fucking Minions.
I know. The sublime being Toy Story. And the ridiculous being the Minions. So let's be fair. This is the latest movie in the successful animated Minions franchise.
Okay.
Which is about a tribe of goofy, yellow capsule-shaped creatures who live to serve villains. And it is the gooeyest, most frenetic, and most incoherent entry in the series to date. Maybe I'm a voice in the wilderness because I hear it's been getting positive reviews, and there are aspects of it I absolutely enjoyed. It starts by recounting important moments in the centuries-long history of these gibbering screw-ups. There's a museum tour, and the docent, who is voiced by Allison Janney, is talking about the Minions as if they're real and significant in that. Shall we call it the Minionverse? Anyway, this movie focuses on two Minions who want to tell the stories of their adventures, and they discover the perfect means to do so when the troupe ends up in Hollywood during what seems to be the 1920s. And they decide, these two Minions, that they're going to make movies. So everything's good about their arrival in Hollywood until a book of spells taken from a wizard they served in an earlier time and messed up with, by the way, opens a portal to a dark dimension where monsters dwell. I know this is meant as kind of a love letter to movie making and that classic Hollywood era, but there's chronological and then there's illogical. And I'll give you an example. A major reference to a 1950s science fiction icon lands in the middle of this mishmash. And I'm thinking, well, I thought this was supposed to be the 20s or 30s, and they keep leaning on this as the source of some of their jokes. And there are some good gags and a lot of meta humor. And you've got a starry bunch of voice actors for the kids and the grown-ups, including Christoph Waltz, Jeff Bridges, Jesse Eisenberg, Zoe Deutsch, Bobby Moynihan, Trey Parker from South Park lends his voice to one of the characters. And, you know, it looks dazzling, but even at an hour and 30 minutes, it felt a bit long with the requisite city-destroying mayhem making for a very predictable last act. Children do love the Minions, though, and there's fun to be had for the little ones, and there are in-jokes about the movie industry for the grown-ups, so I give it a tentative, okay. But you know what? If you're going to talk about Minions films, I prefer the ones with Steve Carell voicing the hapless and secretly kind-hearted supervillain and Minion Master Gru, who, along with his mate and kids, is easier to care about than these little yellow demons. Minions and Monsters is in theaters, and it'll probably do great work at the box office. And there you have it. Shall we talk TV before we head out?
Yeah, let's talk about TV because I saw this one.
Tell me.
Enola Holmes.
Yes. Okay. So I did as well. And Enola Holmes 1.
It's not TV. It is a movie. Stuff they run on Netflix are movies. But they're not, you know, the kind of things. They're not theater films. That's all. And some of them should be, actually.
This is gray area, and I'm glad you were able to watch it. I thought this is the least of the three Enola Holmes films starring Millie Bobby Brown as the brainy and cute little sister Enola, who is the sister of Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And I still thought it was a diverting time in front of the home screen with engaging actors cavorting in this familiar playground that they twist up a little bit. And that would be the Sherlock Holmes legend. Enola started out as a teen girl detective following in Big Brother's footsteps, kind of like a Victorian Nancy Drew. But in this third installment of the series, she's old enough to get married. And that marriage is how Enola Holmes 3 starts, although that's not where it necessarily goes. She's going to marry her sweetheart, Lord Tewkesbury, played again by Louis Partridge, in a very lavish ceremony on the island of Malta. But horrors, Sherlock, again played by Henry Cavill, isn't Cavill. He's not there. Could he have been kidnapped? And if so, why and by whom? And where is their feisty mother, Eudoria, played once more by Helena Bonham Carter, not to mention their brother, Mycroft, who, by the way, isn't even mentioned, if I'm not mistaken. There's non-traditional casting here and there. For instance, Himesh Patel plays Dr. Watson, and that might put off some hidebound traditionalists, but they got to get over it, you know. It's directed by Philip Barantini, who directed Boiling Point with Stephen Graham, one of the great kitchen dramas ever. And it's written by Jack Thorne, who wrote all three Enola Holmes movies. Thus, he knows the characters and he keeps continuity in the same spirit throughout. But I think that the teenage detective thing that gave the previous two movies some of their charm may be gone now that Enola...
Well, because she's not a teenager. She's not a teenager.
She's on the verge of marriage. But yeah, Millie Bobby Brown is still a very watchable, spunky young lady as Enola. What were your thoughts on it?
I liked it a lot. I liked it better than the second one, but not as much as the first one. How can you not like the first one of anything? It was mentioning Raiders of the Lost Ark, because that's the original. That's the thing all the others are based on. I happen to like her. I happen to like what she does. I happen to like the idea of it all, and I thought this one was pretty good. You know, I thought the only thing complaint I would have is it's an Enola Holmes thing. It's not a Sherlock Holmes thing, and yet he's in it too much.
Well, you know, he is, of course, the master detective. But one of the nice things about this is she, who has been dismissed for two films as just this flighty teenage girl, when in fact she's got the Holmes intellect, is initially initiated into the Council of Detectives or whatever, which is a high honor, I guess.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I thought it was a lot of fun.
The nice part is the fact that I'm not ruining anything when I do this, is that Holmes pretty much admits she's better than he is, you know.
Right.
And I like the character. I like spending a couple of hours with that character, and I hope they do more. You know,
agreed. And yes, she breaks the fourth wall, which is maybe part of the charm of it as well. But
yeah.
Millie Bobby Brown is she's kind of a treat. She's got a lot of personal charm, and she brings all that to the character of Enola Holmes. You know, I'm really excited. I'm just going to rattle these things off. They're not movies; they're TV shows.
We're running way over. Hurry up!
I know. But we're catching up after your long trip. Sugar is back for a second season on Apple TV.
Interesting.
And I really like Colin Farrell as this film noir movie influenced detective in modern day Hollywood who has a secret. The Bear is wrapping up.
Well, the secret you should know by now, because this is a second season. The end of the last season, you find out that secret. And
right.
It changes the whole nature of what it is. You know,
I don't want to blow it in case any listener hasn't seen it before.
Screw them if they haven't. You know, but anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, and I do. I also want to mention The Bear season 5 is 8 episodes that focus on a single turbulent night in the existence of the restaurant The Bear and all the people that you've come to know and in some cases love from the FX and Hulu TV series about the Chicago restaurateur and his family.
Not as good as the other seasons.
But an interesting approach to wrapping it up, that one night in hell.
I've watched 6 episodes, and Marjorie won't watch the other two. She gets stubborn about it. I said, look, Marjorie, you've watched the whole series. You can't watch 2 more 30-minute episodes?
It's the end. Come on, put a bow on it, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it at my end. Anything else for you?
I can't think of it. If we want, oh yes, The Sheep Detectives, we loved.
Oh, lovely film! Oh, what a lovely film!
Just loved it.
And one of the things about it, other than the presence of the great Hugh Jackman as a central figure in the movie, is the science or the technology of computer animation. You know, you and I have both complained about computer animation overkill. This is subtle and brilliant, and you'll believe, you know, remember, You'll Believe a Man Can Fly for that first Superman movie.
It's just, but it's endearing. You know?
It is.
You'll believe a sheep can talk. You can believe a sheep can talk. I hate it when we anthropomorphize animals, but we love this thing. And I'm trying to think what else. We didn't watch a lot while we were on vacation, just the movies they had on the boat. So I can't tell you about anything else we saw. But, you know, I mean, I really like The Sheep Detectives. And if you have Prime Video, it's playing right now on Prime Video. So
lucky viewers who haven't seen it. I'm going to say this right now. I think it's going to be in my top 10 for the year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, easily. Can't miss. You know, it's really good. Really good. Unless something better comes out, you know.
I can't wait till you see the invite and give us a little feedback on that. But in the meantime, you can check me out on Facebook at Michael Snyder's Culture Blast page.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. You know, I got to start the music.
Oh, I know the theme.
Whoops. Wait a minute. There. Hold on. I'm pushing the wrong button. There we go.
Where you can listen to Alex and I and check out some of my articles in the Voice of San Francisco. And you can check me out on Twitter at Culture Blaster, and obviously here on GabNet in a couple of weeks we'll be back to do another compilation of new films and a little bit of chat about television.
In the meantime, why don't you all go listen to GabNet, folks, and enjoy yourselves. See you next time, Michael.
See you, buddy.